Hi, I'm Chris Green, the history chap, telling forgotten stories from British history. Now, you might be aware of the ship, the Empire Windrush, which brought Caribbean immigrants to Britain in 1948. But you might not be aware of the amazing story of the ship itself. A ship that served in the Second World War on the German side. And her name wasn't originally the Empire Windrush. Did you know that before the war, she'd transported German immigrants to South America? And during the war, had transported Jews on their way to Auschwitz concentration camp. And are you aware that she was the support ship to the battleship Tirpitz, and that she survived being torpedoed twice by the RAF and striking three mines before being captured by the British? And while she famously brought 800 West Indians to Britain in 1948, did you know that was the only time she ever visited the Caribbean? Or that there was another group of immigrants on that voyage who history has forgotten? Can you guess who they were? And whilst we're on the subject, how did she get the name Empire Windrush? In this story, you will also learn how she ended up serving as a British troop ship, transporting British servicemen and their families to the Korean War, the Greek Civil War, the Far East, and the Suez Canal Zone, and how she participated in the Fleet Review at Spithead to mark Queen Elizabeth II's coronation, before a year later sinking to the bottom of the Mediterranean. The Empire Windrush has a more interesting history than you might think, and this is her story. The Windrush, or to give her full name, HMT Empire Windrush, didn't start life with that name. In fact, she was a German ship, built in Hamburg and operating as a cruise liner, before being commandeered by the German Navy in the Second World War. The Monte Rosa, as she was originally called, was built by Blohm & Voss shipbuilders near Hamburg. They were the same shipbuilders who would construct the mighty Nazi battleship, the Bismarck. Launched in December 1930, she was named after the second highest peak in the Alps, Switzerland's highest peak on the border with Italy, Monte Rosa. She was the fifth and last of the Monte-class passenger ships built for the Hamburg Süd Shipping Company. At 500 feet in length and a top speed of 14 knots, she was about half the size of the big liners that dominated the transatlantic routes at the time, such as the Queen Mary and the rival German vessel, the Bremen. The Hamburg Süd Company had envisaged that the Monte Rosa and her sister ships would fill the lucrative route transporting immigrants, principally German immigrants, to South America. Yes, I know what you're thinking, the Nazi rat run, and whilst the Nazi rat run to South America at the end of the Second World War is well known, it's often forgotten that many Germans have been heading there since the 19th century. Indeed, the biggest number of Germans migrating occurred in the 1920s, prior to the Great Depression. For instance, in both 1923 and 24, 10,000 Germans emigrated to the continent, principally Argentina. Unfortunately, by the time the Monte Rosa was ready for service, the world had entered the Great Depression, and the German emigration market had dried up, or at least dried up enough not to make running five ships profitable. So, while she did make a trip to South America in March 1931, her owners repurposed her as a cruise ship, offering cheap holidays around the coastlines of Northern Europe. As the economy lifted during the 1930s, Monte Rosa did make 20 round trips carrying immigrants to South America. However, those trips were the icing on the cake. For the most part, she was retained as a cruise ship, taking passengers up and down the Norwegian coast and around the North Sea. It was whilst on one of these cruises that in 1934, the Monte Rosa ran aground off the Faroe Islands whilst carrying 1,480 crew and passengers. There was no loss of life, and after 18 hours, she was refloated and resumed her cruise with only the tiniest of mentions in the newspapers. She received a bit more attention, or at least in Germany, in 1936, when she rendezvoused with the German airship, Graf Zeppelin, and a bottle of champagne was hoisted from the liner to the airship in a publicity stunt. At the outbreak of the Second World War, she was commandeered by the German Navy and acted as a troop ship in the invasion of Norway in April 1940. Later on, she was used as an accommodation and recreation ship attached to the battleship Tirpitz. The Tirpitz would regularly head out into the ocean from her port in Norway to attack Allied convoys heading to Russia. In September 1943, Tirpitz was damaged in a British submarine attack. Unwilling to move her back to Germany for repairs, fearing further attacks, the Navy used the Monte Rosa to bring hundreds of civilian engineers and workers to Norway to conduct the repairs. Repairs completed, the Tirpitz remained in Norwegian waters for the next year and was subjected to repeated Allied air attacks. Finally, in November 1944, she was sunk by the RAF. Rather like the Tirpitz, the Monte Rosa was to spend most of the war either in Norwegian waters or transporting men and materials backwards and forwards to Germany. And it was in this capacity that the future Empire Windrush, beacon of multicultural Britain, has a much darker chapter. In November 1942, below decks were cleared of furniture and a series of cages were installed. And then on two occasions that month, members of Norway's small Jewish population were herded onto the ship. In total, the Monte Rosa took 46 Jews to Hamburg, where they were transported by train to Auschwitz concentration camp. Prior to the war, Norway's Jewish population had stood at just under 3,000. 772 were arrested and were sent to concentration camps, including those carried by the Monte Rosa. Less than three dozen of that 772 survived. For the rest of the war, she continued to transport troops and materials between Norway and Germany. And because of this important logistical role, she was specifically targeted by the Allies in March 1944. British and Canadian Bristol Bow fighters hit her with two torpedoes and eight rockets. Somehow, she survived and managed to reach safety in Denmark. But now she was a marked ship. 3 months later, in June 1944, whilst docked at Oslo, Norwegian members of SOE managed to attach limpet mines to her hull. The mines detonated whilst carrying 3,000 German troops back to Germany. But once again, the Monte Rosa managed to stay afloat and reach safety. Then in September 1944, she hit a mine. In a successful effort to keep her afloat, the captain shut the vessel's watertight doors. It's estimated that 200 people were trapped and drowned below the decks. The Monte Rosa seemed to live a charmed life. Even when she hit another mine in February 1945, she stayed afloat and was towed to a port in occupied Poland. By now, the war was well and truly turning against the Germans. As the Soviet army advanced into eastern Prussia, German soldiers and civilians fled before them. Whilst the Monte Rosa had no power, she could hold a lot of people. And so, she was towed to Copenhagen, with over 5,000 German refugees on board. The vessel ended the war in Kiel, where she was captured by British troops in May 1945. The only survivor of the five Monte-class ships, she became a prize of war and was transferred to the ownership of the British Ministry of Transport. And the Monte Rosa was given a new name, the Empire Windrush. Over 1,000 merchant vessels in the service of the British government during and after World War II were given the first name Empire. Around 60 of these Empire vessels were named after British rivers, and the Windrush was one of them. The River Windrush rises in the Cotswolds and meanders its way through 35 miles of, quite frankly, beautiful English countryside, including the tourist hotspots of Bourton-on-the-Water and Burford, before joining the River Thames, just west of Oxford. She was also given a new prefix of HMT, His Majesty's Troop Ship. And it was as a troop ship that HMT Empire Windrush would spend the rest of her career, transporting British servicemen and their families to and from Southampton in Britain and her colonies in the Middle and Far East, places such as the Suez Canal Zone, Aden, Singapore, Hong Kong, with one notable journey exception. Before we go on, I just want to announce that coming very soon will be the stories of the British Wars with the Gurkhas, Admiral Thomas Cochrane, the real-life Master and Commander, and the men who forfeited their Victoria Crosses. Anyway, back to the Empire Windrush and that voyage. In 1948, with spare capacity in her schedule, the Empire Windrush embarked on her one and only journey to the Caribbean. Starting at Trinidad, she then toured the Caribbean, eventually ending up at Kingston, Jamaica. Along the way, she picked up a variety of white travellers heading back to the UK, such as political activist Nancy Cunard from the shipping family, and West Indians who wanted to find employment in Britain. Looking at his empty berths, the ship's captain took out adverts in local papers offering cheap tickets on the return voyage to Britain. For many men, and the majority of the passengers would be men, the opportunity to leave the economic hardship of the British colonies in the Caribbean and find decent work and a new life in Britain was too good an opportunity to miss. The marketing campaign filled the berths, and when the HMT Empire Windrush finally left Jamaica, there were nearly 1,000 passengers on board. 800 of them gave their last country of residence as being one of the British colonies in the Caribbean, half of whom were from Jamaica. Many were former servicemen hoping to rejoin the RAF. During World War II, 6,000 black Caribbean men volunteered for the RAF, 5,500 serving as ground crew and about 450 as air crew. A further 80 women also joined the Women's Auxiliary Air Force, the WAF. Also on board the Windrush, and part of another interesting immigration story, were 66 Poles. They had been detained by the Soviets after Stalin's occupation of Poland in 1939. The Poles on the Empire Windrush had made their way via Iran to Mexico, where they'd joined the ship. Apart from a solitary man, the rest were women and children coming to the UK to join male relatives as part of the Polish Resettlement Act. This act had been passed to accommodate Britain's wartime allies, whose country was now behind the communist Iron Curtain. Eventually, 150,000 Poles would settle in Britain in the years after the Second World War. The Empire Windrush docked at Tilbury on the River Thames on the 22nd of June 1948. The arrival of those 800 West Indians is a symbolic moment for many in the story of Britain. However, the Windrush wasn't the first ship to arrive with West Indian migrants. The SS Ormond had docked in Liverpool over a year earlier, bringing about 250 immigrants. Likewise, a similar number had arrived on the SS Almanzora at Southampton in December 1947. But unlike those occasions, this time the press were there. Pathé newsreels caught the moment that the West Indian men stepped onto the shore of Britain. They were full of hope, and the mood was summed up by one of the passengers, the Calypso King, Aldwyn Roberts, aka Lord Kitchener, who sang "London is the place for me" to the cameras. So, whilst not the first, and certainly not the last ship to bring immigrants from the Caribbean, it was the moment that the press alerted the world to this new movement. The Windrush has come to be used as a shorthand for West Indian migration to the UK, although interestingly, it was the only time the Windrush itself ever visited the Caribbean. From now on until the end of her career in 1954, she would serve as a troop ship, actually transporting many more British servicemen and their families to and from Britain than she had Caribbean immigrants. In one respect, those servicemen and their families, just like the Poles from Mexico, are also a Windrush generation, just with a different story. By June 1949, HMT Empire Windrush was transporting troops to Hong Kong in wake of the communist victory in the Chinese Civil War. The following year, in February 1950, she was bringing the last British soldiers stationed in Greece during the Greek Civil War home. The last unit to embark were the 1st Battalion, the Beds and Hearts Regiment. Alongside these soldiers was the youngest passenger, 45-day-old Christopher Atkins, whose British father had married a Greek lady. In October 1950, she was once more sailing to the Far East, this time to Japan, transporting British troops to the Korean War. On board were the 55th Field Squadron Royal Engineers, the 8th King's Royal Irish Hussars, and the Gloucestershire Regiment. Despite its ageing infrastructure and less than robust mechanics, the men of the Gloucestershire Regiment had a soft spot for the Windrush, for the river that she was named after rose in their county. The Gloucesters would fight at the epic battle on the Injin River during the Korean War. It was an incredible story of bravery and survival from a war that far too many British people don't know a lot about. As the 1950s progressed, the Empire Windrush continued her troopship duties. In 1951, she was taking RAF personnel and their families to Egypt. The following year, she was bringing home 500 men from the 1st Battalion, Green Howards, from Singapore, arriving in Southampton in the November. In 1953, she took a short break from this relentless slog to celebrate the coronation of Queen Elizabeth II. On the 15th of June, just 2 weeks after her coronation, the young queen conducted a fleet review at Spithead, just off Portsmouth. Over 325 ships were present, including 197 Royal Navy warships. Also present were warships from 13 Commonwealth navies and 16 from foreign navies, including the USS Baltimore, representing the United States. The impressive lineup also included vessels from the UK's fishing fleet, the RNLI, and Trinity House. And finally, there were 34 ships representing the Merchant Navy. And there, in line J, was the Empire Windrush. You have to admit it, she had a heck of a career. 8 months later, in February 1954, she set off for Yokohama in Japan. There she picked up soldiers wounded in the Korean War, including men from the Duke of Wellington's regiment, who'd been injured at the Third Battle of the Hook. The Third Battle of the Hook, fought in May 1953, had resulted in 86 men from the regiment being wounded, as well as 20 being killed. Boarding the Empire Windrush, they headed home via Hong Kong, Colombo, Aden, picking up servicemen and families along the way. Mechanical problems meant that it actually took 10 weeks to complete the normal 4-week journey to the Suez Canal. She passed through the Suez Canal, which was still under British control at this time. Although tensions with Egyptian nationalists were rising, the Suez crisis was still 2 years away. In Port Said, at the northern end of the canal, 50 Royal Marines boarded, taking the total on board to 1,276 passengers and 222 crew, just 43 below her capacity. She now steamed into the Mediterranean, homeward bound. At 6:15 a.m. on the 28th of March, 300 miles off the coast of Algeria, there was an explosion in the engine room. Black smoke and flames erupted from the funnel. The resulting fire swiftly knocked out all electrical power. The captain ordered the transmission of a distress call. Soon afterwards, the emergency backup generator was also put out of action. And just half an hour after the explosion, Captain William Wilson gave the order to abandon ship. Lifeboats were swung out, and the Birkenhead drill of women and children first was followed. By the way, I've told the story of how the Birkenhead drill, women and children first, came about in my very last story. So check it out. There's a link in the description below. Without power, the electrical winding systems for the lifeboats were useless, and each of the 22 lifeboats had to be laboriously launched by hand. Despite the thick smoke covering the ship and the trouble with the lifeboats, eyewitnesses don't recall any sign of panic. In fact, Captain Wilson had to tell relaxed families to actually hurry up and get in the boats. In the end, only 12 of the lifeboats were launched. Many of the crew and passengers had no other option but to jump overboard. Captain Wilson was the last to leave the ship at 7:35 a.m. Many of those in the water were picked up by the lifeboats that had been launched, whilst others were picked up by rescue ships, the first of which arrived on the scene just 15 minutes after the abandoned ship order had been given. The Dutch ship Mentor arrived and let down ladders. Their captain reported that the people he rescued were in good humour and most were in pyjamas. How very British to abandon a ship in your pyjamas and still be in good spirits. The Dutch gave their rescue charges hot coffee, bread and cakes. Two Italian ships along with a P&O liner and a Norwegian ship also rushed to the scene to assist in the rescue. Amazingly, everyone who jumped into the water was rescued, and the only casualties were 4 crew killed in the engine room during the initial explosion. All the passengers were taken to Algeria, from there to Gibraltar, before being flown back to Britain. The Empire Windrush, still burning adrift in the Mediterranean, was approached by a Royal Naval vessel. Despite the fierce heat, a party of sailors managed to get on board and attached a towing line. However, during the early hours of the 30th of March 1954, whilst under tow to Gibraltar, HMT Empire Windrush sank. She lies at a depth of over 8,000 feet on the floor of the Mediterranean. Initially, newspapers alluded to sabotage by Egyptian terrorists, but the Board of Inquiry concluded that the explosion and the loss of ship were due to a mechanical failure. There are plans to salvage one of her anchors as a monument to the Windrush generation. We'll see how that gets on. And there you have it. I bet there are some bits of this story you weren't aware of. And while she's known to history as a symbol of multicultural Britain, the Empire Windrush played a supporting role in so many other stories too. I mean, not only did she bring West Indians to settle in Britain, but also Polish immigrants too. And she took Germans to settle in South America and brought thousands of British servicemen and their families home from serving abroad. In many ways, she was a migrant ship, but with a dark history from the Holocaust. A ship that transported men to and from the Korean War, and who was one of just 35 merchant vessels chosen to honour a young queen at her coronation review. It's a heck of a story, pretty much unknown, and I hope you've enjoyed it. And don't forget, coming soon, the British Wars with the Gurkhas, Admiral Thomas Cochrane, the real-life master and commander, and the men who forfeited their Victoria Crosses. Sign up for my free weekly newsletter so you don't miss them. Click on the link below or visit thehistorychap.com. I'm Chris Green, the History Chap. Thanks for joining me today. Keep well, and I'll speak to you again very soon.